it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History.
Win.
We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Yes, yes, welcome to the Tim McKernan Show. Timothy Michael McKernan, Action Jackson with you on the program. Thanks to James Carlton, Mark Hanna of Evergreen Wealth Strategies, Seth Goldkamp of Design Air Heating and Cooling online at designairservice.com, and Munganess St. Louis Acura, and Munganess Burkhardt Alton Toyota for sponsoring the podcast. Timothy Michael McKernan, Action Jackson with you on a podcast that welcomes you to get involved anytime you would like. T. McKernan at InsideSTL.com. Jackson, a glut of erotic stories back in August and now a dry spell as we enter fall time.
Yeah, it's a real shame is what it is, Tim. It's a real shame because now is, I guess it's cuffing season.
Are you apt to get in a relationship at this time of year?
Yeah.
Are you really? Like, are you truly, like, looking for a relationship because it is now colder?
Not because of it being colder. I just want that in my life.
My God. I told my wife this weekend, we talk about your personal life. That's what we do. That's all
nice.
We've got now. That's all we've got after 15 years.
It's a bustling topic.
Absolutely. And I said, I think Jackson will be married within 3 years. Actually, I was talking about the housing market. And I said, a guy like Jackson is probably in a spot, I don't know, you know, St. Louis, you never know what people's situations are. I know you probably bore witness to that firsthand where all of a sudden somebody has money. Mm. And you go, oh. Well, there's a lot of money passed along from generations to generations.
Oh, yeah.
I think the TikTok kids call it old money. But that your generation will have a very difficult time getting a home if you want one.
Oh, yeah. That's tough.
Yeah.
It's tough. And,
I said, and then Jackson, who I bet will be married within 3 years, that could be a spot, you know?
Yeah. I was actually, my buddy, who I was up
Herb.
In, no, my buddy Mark, works in real estate. And he was telling me, he's like, it's such a quagmire because not only are, you know, mortgage rates and are so high and it's really tough and prices are crazy, but as soon as the house goes in the market, it's snatched up immediately. So it's like not only is, you know, the demand so high, but the inventory is so low and it's crazy. So he's like, yeah, it's a tough spot right now. But he's like, you know, hey. Ebbs and flows. Tim.
Everything's cyclical. That's my dad always say. Everything's cyclical.
Ebbs and flows.
I've seen this shit before. Everything's cyclical. Always live like it's a recession. Tim Sr. says.
It's a good way to live.
That's what he says. I like this question here. Although I've read it a couple of times, and I really don't know how I'm going to answer it. And then I know you can't speak to it, but it comes from a good place. And I shall read it. And we'll see what we do with it.
Cool.
I went back to the TMA fan page. Haven't done that in a while. Do you recognize the images that I posted in the QFTA suggestion file?
The secondary photo I do, that was the gentleman who from Ole Miss who ran onto the field and was surprised when a 275-pound defensive lineman was not pleased with him calling him a pussy to his face.
Oh,
yeah,
God.
That's a world-class image.
Today. God, I can't get enough of it.
It's really
and not
funny.
Only is the image wonderful, it to me is like, I'm thinking about starting a religion. I feel like you might as well.
It's a new development, but I'm in for it.
And in my religion, this might be like our symbol.
Yeah, your icon.
This guy, because this guy represents so much for me at this moment.
Yeah.
Here is... somebody at Ole Miss.
Right. Tim is making a motion.
I am, and I'm pausing. Running on the football field, thinking he's invincible.
Yep.
And then runs up to somebody, calls him a pussy, and then is shocked when there's retribution for the action.
Yeah, that really does.
As a student at Ole Miss. Running on the football field after a hotty-totty good God almighty win and then running up to an LSU defensive player and taunting him and calling him a pussy and then captures it and then tries to frame the LSU player who belonged on the field,
indeed,
who was just called a pussy, as the bad guy because he said something back to him. And then some people go along with it. That is my religion. And those of you who understand what I'm saying, come follow me. We'll walk around South St. Louis together.
Nice.
Yeah.
Dougie, I can't wait to see that.
Yep. And I'm going to walk across the lily pond at Francis Park.
Hey, I'll be there.
Yeah, and you can document that.
Absolutely.
And then we'll have this symbol in a little building. No taxes. Be great.
Yeah.
And this guy will be the symbol of our religion.
That's your golden parachute.
That's my golden parachute. Yeah. But in the thread, which included Angel Youngs,
right,
who it doesn't seem like you're familiar with, and I actually believe you, Doug wouldn't be familiar with her. I think the only person who may be familiar with her would be Iggy on TMA, actually, now that I think about it. I'm not even sure he would be because she's kind of, you know, young.
Yeah, quite literally. Yeah, don't know her work, but she seemed beautiful.
Sporting.
Yeah, seems like it.
So this was the first question, too, that was posted. Two-part question. What surprised you most when you became a dad? I joined the dad club last year, and two things really caught me off guard were how much I would be sick with the kid constantly full of germs and the extent of the postpartum recovery. I feel like all male Catholic school left me woefully unprepared for how much support a woman needs during that time, and I think us dudes should know more and talk about it more. Part two, best TV dad of all time. Well, the answer to that one I think is universal, and that's Conrad Bain, who played the role of Mr. Drummond on Different Strokes, unless others would take the stance of George Papadopoulos, who was married to a woman whose name was Ma'am.
Mm-hmm.
On Webster with that cute little Emmanuel Lewis. And there seemed to be a theme of certain typecasting in the early 1980s. Jackson, do you have a favorite television dad before I talk about a topic that you know nothing about?
Sure. Yeah, I'll spread my wings. I'm going to go a little off the beaten path. People not going to think of, because in your vein, that's kind of like the sitcom, like formulaic.
Sure,
like TV
sure,
dad.
Sure.
I'm going to go Jerry Stiller as George Costanza.
Nice play.
Seinfeld.
It's a nice play.
Jerry Stiller is a legend. May he rest in peace.
It's a nice play.
Thank you.
What surprised me? So the question is certainly focused on the postpartum recovery. I want to answer it well, and it's tough because, you know, oftentimes when I see a question, I'm like, oh, that's the one that I will go with, and then we're going to go a bunch of different directions. It's tough because I know you can't speak to this experience at all. What surprised me most, God, something that I've said and I don't feel like is said enough. This is probably not necessarily what the gentleman who posed the question was asking, but I do feel like, I don't know if I would say it's important to say. I just think it's something that a lot of men can relate to, and that is the first 6 months kind of just suck if you're a guy. But I love and have loved in a major way, really. I mean, now my younger son is, he'll be 21 months in, what do we got here, 3 days. And has a personality and hell throws a ball with me and runs around with a hockey stick and has been hitting a golf ball forever. So, and is just the happiest kid. My God. So I love that. But the infant stage, you're all, if you don't know and you haven't been a parent, you're thinking, okay, here we go. And then the reality is, and of course you can understand this just from a logic standpoint, that child that everything was built up for that moment really doesn't need you.
Mm.
The child doesn't. The child needs his mother more than his father, but the mother needs the father to be there for her more than the father. The father can certainly help out with changing diapers and so on, but in most cases, you're not really in a role of a parent yet.
Right.
It's... And I don't enjoy it at all. I mean, now there are a number of reasons why I am done and put out to pasture as far as having another child. But that part I did not enjoy, and I think that men, this is more for men, don't want to say that because it may come off the wrong way. But since I come off poorly regularly, I'm comfortable with taking another one here and saying, that part I did not like, don't have any interest in reliving, wouldn't be anyway, but you need to be there for your wife. And I agree, later in the thread, somebody pointed out, an actual lady said, I think it's a conversation among men, husbands and dads, to have at a younger age, for me, for example, with two boys, to make them aware of that part. I wasn't really aware of the importance of being there truly, in a way, not from a postpartum depression standpoint. I don't think my wife dealt with that. And I think she would say that as well. But to just be there for my wife. I mean, you really, it is a time of, that's all hands on deck. And it's like, oh, well, just because the babies are breastfeeding and she's at home, that doesn't mean you don't want to have a responsibility. But the responsibility will most likely be more towards your wife, or if you have other children, helping out with the other children.
Right.
So from a parenting standpoint, I love that. I love the opportunity to teach lessons, and I probably treat my son, you know, the six-year-old, more like a 12-year-old. I obviously think it's the right thing to do, otherwise I wouldn't be doing it. I think I was sheltered from things that I don't think, for me personally, I want to shelter my kids from. Mm-hmm. I think it's personally healthy to talk about things that I think other parents may not want to talk about. And I understand that, and I'm not saying I'm right and they're wrong, but for me, that's what I think is the right way to go about things. And I love the opportunity to have a conversation and explain things, because I never want, nor have I said, I'd be really surprised if I ever do say now, since I'm 6 years in, because I said so. Because I said so doesn't explain it. And even if I recognize, for example, I have the news on. I mean, shit.
Right.
About this. I mean, you're talking, so my son is watching the news with me. People, oh my God, I can't believe you let, well, that's fine. Fine. Fortunately, I'm not your father, so you don't have to worry about it. But there's a, why are they at war? Talking about
Israel and Hamas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, I got to tell you, there are people who are older and incredibly more intelligent than your father who can't necessarily answer that question themselves,
right,
effectively. And I said, honestly, I don't know. It's, they're fighting over their homes and where they can live.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes back thousands of years, and it's incredibly unfortunate. And it's part of humanity and has been well before we were around, and will be around well before we're all, after we're gone. But I don't want to say, well, it's just, you'll understand when you're older, because I don't understand
right.
necessarily per se.
Right.
So that kind of opportunity to, like last night, for the first time, and I was conscious, I was watching the Rangers and Astros game 7, because I live bet the over, which shipped.
Nice.
And he said, well, how many outs do you get in an inning? Or how many strikes do you get? And I go, 3. And then how many outs do you get in an inning? I'm like, oh, we're talking baseball.
Yeah.
And then in my mind, I'm like, God, I was already at Cardinal game when I was 5, kind of like excited about Lonnie Smith's inside the park home run. This motherfucker's behind. But then I thought to myself, God, that means I was strange even back when I was 5, because that I understood all of this stuff. And so he goes, well, I don't understand. I said, well, I kind of started doing play-by-play and explaining it. And we had a good 5 to 10 minutes of that, and then he wandered off and, you know, started playing with Legos again. But I like the opportunity to explain and then answer questions.
Yeah.
It sounds cliche, but there is no such thing as a bad question. And I don't want my children personally to be sheltered from things and to think things are wrong just because dogma says they're wrong.
Right.
For example, curse words. Now, I will say, I told him this, I said, you know, I have no problem with the words. I don't get it. I think it's one of the strangest things that goes on in, I don't know if that goes on beyond the United States. I assume that it does, but I don't know if certain words are, forbidden on broadcast. But I said, here's the deal. You want to say these things, you know, just know that it's going to be a problem at school and other people don't say them. So it's words adults can say and can't. And then he goes, why can adults say it? And I go, honestly, I don't know. I don't know. I don't necessarily agree with it, but I'm just telling you what the penalty will be if you say these words.
Right.
If you say them at school.
Mm-hmm.
Now, why these words have been empowered, I'm in awe. For example, going back to news coverage of the Israeli-Palestinian, I don't know what it's being called, war, conflict, whatever we have going on right now, and they can show images of bodies.
Oh, yeah. It's brutal.
But if somebody yells out shit or fuck, they bleep that out. Doesn't that just seem off the mark?
It's like the audiovisual embodiment of the quandary, right?
It doesn't like negatively impact my life. It just strikes me as something that is so antiquated and outdated. But it's just one of those. He said, "Fuck." Yeah.
Right.
What happened? Notice anything happen? But it's just like, oh, you can't say that word. So I like to try to, teach comes from a place of but give my perspective and then answer questions, even if on the surface the questions are ridiculous. Well, I mean, he's 6 and he was 5 and he was 4 and he was 3. So I love that. I don't know if I would say I'm surprised by that because it wasn't something that I was expecting one way or the other to like or dislike. I didn't think about it. You don't think about it until you have the situation. But I know that I love that. And, my wife and I, it's just one of the things that comes with it. We were told we weren't going to be able to have children. Right. So one of the things that comes with not having children until, I guess, Jameson was born when I was 40. Yeah. But it wasn't, if we could have, we would have had children earlier. It just isn't the way that it worked out. So I think I am better equipped to be a parent at my age now than I would have been if I were, say, around your age. Mm-hmm. And I suppose that's obvious, but the other side of it would be if you were to have a child right now,
mm-hmm.
you'd be able to be quote-unquote done when you're 43 or 44.
Right.
I mean, holy shit.
Yeah, it's a lot of life left.
It is.
Yeah.
But from being a better father standpoint, I think I am, for me personally, because I think you are well wise and conduct yourself more developed than I certainly did at 25, and I have more arrested development, but that it just, for me, it personally works out, and I love it. I mean, there's nothing else. I realize people can say it, and then deep down, you know what the fuck's going on, but there's just nothing in my life where I would risk my children's, I'm talking about fucking somebody else. That would be, it's just not even like a sweat. So it like takes it off the table.
Right.
And I'm not sitting here judging those who do have side pieces and affairs and whatever and potentially break up families because, I was a terrible fucking first husband and, I've been a shitty significant other, before getting married a second time. But again, life experience teaches you these things. And, we were talking about, Doug Vaughn Nirvana.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you are dangerous because at 25, you already have kind of gotten to see me and Doug handle the stuff.
Right.
And then also gotten the hell that comes with being on TMA and Balloon Party, which is a totally different kind of it. And I can't tell you not to care. You have to like live it
right
to get to a point where you go, okay, whatever, I don't really care what you say.
Yeah.
It comes with experience, and so that's how I view being a parent. I couldn't have been this kind of parent at 27, not because a 27 year old is incapable, because of me as a 27 year old, I was not mature enough.
Right. I hear what you're saying. It's case by case and it's right. Person by person. That's just how we're. I don't think like currently. I know I'm not ready for that responsibility. I'm not mature enough. I'm not in a spot where I would want to be. But I know I'm not ready for it. But I know one day I do really want to have children. Mm-hmm. That's something that I really look forward to.
Do you have an idea of how many children you would like?
Two it seems, you know, man-to-man defense, preferably, but open to more, open to less. I know that that's something I want to have in my life is to have children. Not only because I hold my parents in such esteem, and like it's almost like I have this itch to pay it forward.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Because I know how important they are to me and my development, and how important they still are to me. And I would love the opportunity to pay that forward because, you know, I feel like not my responsibility by any means, but like something that would be really fulfilling for me.
Yeah.
And can continue on the family, man. It's all really, and I see my brother who has two children and how much he loves them and how much I love his two children. And it's really cool, you know. And I hear you talk about how much you like it could just the second you see your children. When you get home, no matter how your day went.
Yeah, it's like a drug.
Yeah, and that's something.
It's an automatic pick-me-up.
Right, and something that
surprised me. That's something. Yeah. Speaking of surprising,
yeah.
You don't know that. I suppose you hear, like, I know my dad has told a couple of stories about, he loves telling this story about, he came home and my brother Danny was waiting for him and said, I got good news and I got bad news. My dad goes, well, what's the good news? I don't know what the hell the good news was. I learned to catch a ball or something. Mm-hmm. What's the bad news? I just crapped my pants.
I like that.
And as a parent, I remember he would tell that story, and I'd go, amusing, but, I mean, that's what kids do. And now as a parent, you kind of like, now that you live like this thing where you'll hear stories that are just asinine, but you see the enthusiasm in your right. children for it. And as they learn things, you know, the walking and like, you know, my 1-year-old throwing a ball, hitting a golf ball. Now he sees his brother playing hockey. So now he grabs a hockey puck and stick and runs around and see the two of them interacting,
right.
which is something you don't think of until you see it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's the absolute best. I also think, and I know I've heard it, but I don't know how often I've heard it. I think it makes you, it's because it's subjective what a better person is. So I don't know if a better person is fair, but more, I think it makes you more empathetic.
Sure.
To understanding that everybody is dealing with a situation and you don't know what the situation is. And so it's best to just kind of just go about your day and, you know. I don't know. There's probably a direct correlation to me withdrawing from social media to becoming a father. Not necessarily when my son was born, because I spoke to the first however many months of kind of just being like, okay, you know, eat, sleep. But just going, okay, I'm not going to spend time arguing with strangers. And also, in parentheses, oftentimes, if somebody's sitting there like taking shots, most of the time it's not somebody I really would like interact with in person anyway.
Sure.
So why would I take time away from my wife and my son and now two sons to do that?
Yeah.
So it kind of clarifies and puts you on point more.
Yeah.
I certainly am not like, man, I wish I didn't have children so I could argue with strangers on social media. You know what I mean? And so also I think it just makes you more of an empathetic person.
Yeah,
I think, but I don't think, again, it's not something that you can tell. I mean, I can tell you this, but until you live it,
right.
You know, just like you, like I don't know what it's like to be a Jewish kid, you know, and growing up in St. Louis. I have no fucking idea. You can tell me all day long. I have no idea. You know what it's like to be a Catholic kid growing up in St. Louis, even though it seems like everybody's a Catholic kid growing up in St. Louis. So,
it's a value perspective.
Yeah. So you just understand that people have different experiences, and I value hearing your experience, like your perspective on what's going on in the Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
You certainly are going to see it through a different lens than I do.
Mm-hmm.
But not because you're different makes it wrong. I'm just intrigued to hear your perspective.
Right. And I think that is what often I think is missed sometimes in people. Like, I think people are more quick to impart judgment than they are to listen to others' perspectives. And I think once you get a good view of others' perspectives, it can kind of shape how you think about things, not only in that particular situation, but going forward. And so much of it is learning about other people's perspective and And I keep going back to it, but I truly think it's such a valuable life lesson. And Ted Lasso is that be curious and not judgmental. And, you know, in my case, I am not a parent. And so in this situation, I am solely curious. I cannot be judgmental mm-hmm. because I have not walked a mile in those shoes. And so often people are just so quick to judgment way before they're quick for curiosity. I just think the world would be a better place if we were more quick to curiosity.
Yeah, I would agree. I wonder what the root of that is. I do think there's some semblance. It's called tribalism, but I think that comes with a negative connotation that it does that makes it look like it's wrong. Who do I hang around with? People with similar likes mm-hmm. and senses of humor. Well, mm-hmm. then therefore, there's a good chance that we come from a similar background.
Right.
But that it's only, to me, a negative if I then discriminate against those or don't hire or treat poorly those who don't come from. But if I want to hang around with those people, I don't think that makes one a bad person. Do you follow me? Do you agree with that?
Okay,
all right.
Yeah, that's just human nature.
Right, right, exactly. But I love getting a perspective from somebody who, you know, when we were starting up, I don't remember which one it was. I think it was 920. I looked at the line. Oh, I couldn't have been 920 because we had Brian Burwell on 920. Probably 590, I guess, in 2016. And I was looking at the lineup, and I'm like, well, this doesn't mean this needs to be the United Nations, but I think it's healthy not just to, like, force people into spots because they are a certain race mm-hmm. or their gender or whatever the case might be, but to try to cultivate and go out of my way to cultivate talent with a diverse background, not giving jobs to but giving opportunity to on the weekends, nights, early mornings, whatever the case may be. So it's in the farm system, and then that way they can develop. And then when there is an opportunity in the main lineup, we have a farm system.
Right.
And I recall talking to Mike Claiborne, for example, and trying to find people from the Black community to be involved. Again, not just giving jobs because someone is Black or giving a job because somebody is a woman, but going, okay, I mean, I'm looking at this. And, you know, if you're talking about a situation in St. Louis and all of us are from South St. Louis, we're going to view it one way.
Right, right.
And I think it's healthy to hear the other perspective. And so I think that in a way comes with becoming a parent is that you become more empathetic. You also, again, I don't like to say what's important because what's important is subjective, but what is more, I don't want to say selfless, but less selfish.
Sure.
And you sympathize. Like, when, for example, when I would fly before I had a child and you had a kid screaming, I'm like, oh my God, what the fuck?
Uh-huh.
Well, now that I'm a parent, I'm like, yeah, whatever. I understand.
Right.
And on top of it, it's not necessarily because you're just letting it go. Kids don't know how to pop their ears. And when there's pressure and the pressure increases from whatever, landing, I guess, it's a motherfucker for baby. I don't know how to do that. And a lot of them are going to scream. So now you understand that as opposed to going, oh, this was a shitty parent, you know?
Right.
It's just one of those things. I guess it makes you more patient.
Yep. I can imagine that, yeah.
Yeah, it's just one of those things. I certainly don't, I'm a wonderful person. Look at me as a beacon of morality and character. I'm just saying you just kind of understand things differently. And I think most people certainly experience becoming a parent at a younger age than I did, in particular in St. Louis. But that was just the way that things worked out for my wife and myself. But at the same time, I don't think if I would have had a child, even at 30, I don't think I would have been not ready for it, because I don't know if you're ever ready for it, because how can you be ready for something that you don't know what it is? But perhaps wanting the experience.
Yeah.
And if you want the experience, which is certainly something we did, then it makes you apt to be more adjustable
sure.
to the sacrifices, of course, that come with it. But if you love doing something, it's not a sacrifice.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I totally hear that.
All these crazy alien stories can't be true, can they? Hey, it's Stephen Diener, host of the Unidentified Alien Podcast. And whether you're new to the conversation or have been looking into it for years, you need to check out the fastest growing alien show out there, the Unidentified Alien Podcast, or UAP for short. There's a crazy amount of alien encounter stories out there from all over the world. And the beauty of it is that I bring them all to you and let you decide what you believe. Download and subscribe to UAP on any of the major podcasting platforms. And you can also find it on UAPpodcast.com.
I don't really, I have a bunch of other questions, Jackson. We got a bunch, but honestly, I don't really want to go into them. I mean, I just don't. They're good. And a lot of them are good questions. They're kind of sports, and that one was kind of the one that got me going. So I don't know. I honestly deleted them actually. I can go back into the, let's see what we got. Here you go. Let's see. No. Let's see. I don't know, Jackson. This one's about Missouri and the college football playoff going to 12 teams. This one's about Catholic education versus public education. This one is about the Michigan cheating thing. This one is about the origin of Bill and Nice Hole Bill.
I like vaguely remember that. I remember listening to the show, and I thought it was the funniest fucking thing of my life. I was a freshman in college before Gulf Coast, and Doug said that's a nice hole, Bill, and I damn near pissed myself. I really thought it was the funniest fucking thing of my
life. I really don't know. I feel like I'm the one who brought Bill in.
It sounds like something you would.
Right. Like, but then Doug did that as a nice hole, Bill.
Yeah, and then that it took off from there. Yeah, Bill is certainly something that you would bring up. But
and then Dotem and his father-in-law.
Bill. Yeah, I mean, it's just, it took off from there, and it works so, I can't hear someone's name being named Bill and not think of TMA. Like, it's fucked up. Because I have people I know named Bill.
Oh, God.
It's unfortunate for them.
What are the chances that that I've got at 10:11 and at 9:52 two separate emails asking about Jermaine Stewart being the opening show? Jermaine Stewart of We Don't Have to Take Our Clothes Off fame, I believe. I'm going to say 1987, Jackson, to get me 86 and 88. I'm a little nervous about 85, but I feel like 86, 87, 88 is going to get me home, and that's where I am. That's my answer, final answer.
We Don't Have to Take Our Clothes Off by Jermaine Stewart. Came out in the year of our Lord. Genius is trying to give me the information on it. And I'm really just fucking butchering this. We don't have to take our clothes off. I'm sorry.
I went to Genius too, so that means I'm doomed.
Yeah, no, Genius is now 1986, Tim.
Whew.
I love Genius, by the way. Just a brief aside.
Nothing wrong with having a brief aside.
Yeah, I like Genius.
The origin of that song, I don't. The overall theme behind why the song. What is the most asinine song, both the name and the sound of it, to counter the metal riffs of the 40-something out of shape guy who probably at best played high school sports, who is now going to tell you how it is and just motherfuck a bunch of professional athletes and coaches and tell you they're the only one who has the balls in this town to really give them the what's what and the who's who. That is essentially what it is. And that is that goes on in obviously Philadelphia all the way to L.A. And all points in between. It's just kind of the thing. And I knew, I guess, inadvertently, it's not like this was a plan. I knew that I wanted to bring a show that was appealing to younger people because it just struck me. I still think this. It's why one of the reasons why I love what City has done, and I did expect this. I didn't expect it to be at the level it's been. But I feel like St. Louis is oftentimes geared toward older people. And it's still going on, and now I'm on the older side of it. But I was saying this when I was younger than you. And for the life of me, I'm just like, why do we not only usually keep our best and brightest, they move to Chicago or take your pick of wherever else, but then on top of it, we don't really have content, and that wasn't the word back in 2002, but it's like this is all geared for like, just like old, Fuck. And listen, hey, there's nothing wrong with having that, but just from a business standpoint, doesn't it make sense to have something that isn't that? So then you can tap into a market.
Yeah.
And so I guess TMA still has a younger audience. Certainly the audience ages with the show, but younger people pick up on it. It's still going on.
Oh yeah.
And I don't know why that is. The show gets labeled as like the porn show, which is whatever. It's fine, great, throw it around if you want. If you want to like discredit me or whomever on the show by saying that, it's wonderful at this point. But that was probably inadvertent by the Cat Martin and myself from filling in for Frank Cusimano when we started the show. His show is the press box, so we jokingly call it. Well, we weren't joking. I'm sure one of his listeners was pissed off at the show and then tried to insult it by calling it the sandbox.
Right.
And so then we went with that, and then the guys who were buying KFNS from Atlanta heard the show and go, that's going to be our morning show. And so they hired us, and that's how that all played out. And 1380, which was being bought at that time by Simmons Media, wanted to hire us as well. So we weren't even a real show. It was just three guys screwing around. Martin probably in his, I guess, late 30s, early 40s, I would guess. I don't know. That would make sense. Probably late 30s. Cat, I guess, is a little older than Martin, I think. I don't know how old the Cat is. And I was 2004, so I was 27 when we started the show. And then producer Joe's a couple years younger than me when he came up a few weeks at when we started the show. And initially, it was really poorly received because it was so different. And in St. Louis, oftentimes, Jackson, brace yourself, change is not necessarily welcomed in this market.
Hmm.
Yeah.
To push back against that one.
Yeah, ponder that and then prepare for your pushback. So then those people went away, and then we began to get the audience. But the plan was, and I don't want to say plan, it's just like, yeah, whatever this stuff is, there's a market for it. Not saying it's bad, it's just not what we want to do. And so we don't have to take our clothes off. I believe. I mean, I would love to be present right now in like a time warp to hear how that came to be the song.
Right.
But I know the mindset was, let's play something ridiculous.
Yeah, it's like a juxtaposition. Juxtaposition.
Nice.
It's a tough word.
It is. It's a good word if you can get it, though. It's a good word if you can get it.
Big time. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've often thought that a really funny sitcom premise is like a sports radio station.
Oh, I want the Larry Sanders Show for sports radio. I could write it right now.
Like,
and one of my longtime advisors has said, he goes, you're leaving money on the table. He goes, your exit is writing an autobiography, you know, because he lived it and he couldn't believe it because he's, you know, handling much larger transactions. And I would call him with the situation. And he goes, man, I've never heard shit like this. I just don't understand. And I go, I can't keep going. I can't keep going. He goes, hey, you're the one that has to live it. It's all about your pain tolerance, you know, talking about like leaving or going, oh, that's enough, because it was so crazy. But he goes, boy, someday when you write a book, this will all pay off.
Yeah.
So what were you saying? I cut you off. I apologize.
It's all like a sitcom that's kind of, you know, Larry Sanders.
Larry Sanders, yeah,
Ballers,
but except on a sports
entourage.
Yeah. Oh, it'd be perfect. To me, what kind of makes TMA unique is the lack of self-awareness of those participating.
Right.
And then Doug's hyper-awareness.
That's the perfect,
you know what I mean?
It's the perfect counterbalance.
Right. And I include myself in the lack of self-awareness category, but I don't know if I would call it lack of self-awareness. I think I probably have hyper-awareness, but then I don't want to say I don't care, because I think oftentimes when people say they don't care, they really do care, but I recognize what the perception is of me by a portion of St. Louis who is aware of my existence, which isn't a large one. And so then I kind of play into it, like with the private school thing and the pervert thing and, you know, like I'm getting turned on talking about two women who may be attracted to each other, whatever the fuck it is. Because I think, oh, God, I can't believe he's talking like that. But at this point, in order to be listening to this show and hating it, I mean, you really have to be on a kamikaze mission of self-destruction.
Yeah, there's no
what other
excuse.
Kind of kamikaze mission is there?
Yeah.
Think about it. Hashtag. So, yeah, I mean, you have to, whereas if we were to just all of a sudden pop up on another station with a wide, like we did with Balloon Party.
Right.
And they go, what the fuck is this?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right. Oh, I totally get it. Yeah. Yeah, and I think that lack of self-awareness would be the key. That would be the driver of the show.
Yes.
With like the couple
people. Because then the audience recognized, like Hank Kingsley was to me the lack of self-awareness guy in Larry Sanders' show.
Right.
And then, I mean, I can go through the whole Larry Sanders plot, but I'm like, God, I mean, I've got all these characters because I lived them. I didn't write them. It's not creativity. It's essentially just documenting it.
Right.
Everybody is a character in the story.
Oh, yeah.
Like, there isn't, like, you and Seymour to me are, like, the most normal ones.
Well, that's what you use. Use, like, an
but then you're the foils.
Or a new producer as the avatar for the audience. The
right,
person
right.
that the audience then right. relates with so that they can be, like, so new and blue to this. And it's like, what the fuck? And the issues with management versus talent.
Oh, God.
And talent versus athlete. Like, there's so much.
And then, like, kind of like how it worked with The Sopranos, every year there was kind of a new,
right.
you know, challenge for Tony, so to speak.
Right, a new foil.
Right. Yeah, we have a bunch of them.
Oh, there's literally too much.
Like, there, yeah, I mean,
you
it
have
really
composition
is.
Characters because you have too many people yeah. to pull from, and it'd be just hilarious.
I mean, it's you know, it is true, and I think at this point people believe us. I mean, I don't know why. You know, this would be a long game of just making shit up.
Yeah.
Like this really, really. Meanwhile, here, and I'm not coming like Hubbard is the end all be all. It's certainly much better than we. But there really wouldn't be characters, you know? I mean, because everybody's just kind of professional and has
yeah, this with this.
Personal lives. You couldn't do it from here.
No. You need the real
I mean, you have to have like this, you know. So in that way, if indeed I do, and I'm not doing this to like get my comeuppance on everybody. It's just like it was so fucking nuts. So nuts. That it would make for an incredible show. But the Larry Sanders show, I look at that, and Judd Apatow, I know, is responsible for it, as well as, I can't recall, Brad Gray. And I go, how? And Gary Shandling.
Right.
And I think it was kind of off of Johnny Carson and Ed McMahon.
Oh, yeah, there's you tons know? Of little pieces. Of,
right.
It's influenced by all of that.
But growing up, I didn't recognize the Hank Kingsley character was Ed McMahon. Because I still can't picture Ed McMahon really thought he could have sat where Johnny sat, but I guess that must have been the dynamic,
Kingsley.
You know, and then chasing ass and every
Kingsley. Jeffrey Tambor.
I mean, that character. But then you needed the Rip Torn character, and it's just brilliant. So then I'm trying to think, like, what dynamic do we play around with it, and I'm just not good enough. Like, I can write the book, so to speak.
Right.
And then give it to brilliant people like Judd yeah. Apatow.
I mean, that's how Tarantino writes, is he writes a book and then makes him
and then, okay, yeah, that, because it needs to be taken.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I don't want it to turn into Winona Ryder and Ben Stiller, second Stiller reference here on the program, son of Jerry, in Reality Bites. If you've seen Reality Bites,
oh, yeah.
So you know what reference I'm making, how they're
right.
like corporate it up and
yeah.
all of a sudden they destroy like the story.
Right.
The story is pure evil at times and pure incompetence, but it is pure and
right.
it can't be created. Like you can't create Ken Strode.
No.
You know, I couldn't have created Ken Strode like if I'm writing something from a fictitious standpoint.
Right.
But since I've interacted with Ken Strode, I just got to document Ken Strode.
Right. It's a perfect.
Oh, my God.
You know,
yeah.
It's like, it's just perfect. And you know, the Rip Torn kind of element is like the main, like the person in management who's not at the top, but they have to deal with the talent and the back and forth that goes on with that.
Are you honored that you're my Rip Torn?
Yeah. You know, I embrace that. I love Rip Torn. I think that
Jackson and I, for those not aware, which would be, I would imagine, everyone outside of me and Jackson. We have some code words when I need a little help.
Yeah, yeah, and it does put a smile on my face whenever I see it. And
oh yeah, because I'll text
when the bat signal goes out. I get the smile on my face because it does remind me of Larry Sanders. And anytime I can think about Gary Shandling, it puts a smile on my face. What an absolute mind we lost on that one.
Oh, couldn't agree with you more on that. I mean, that's a show that I'll probably hear within the next few weeks. Go, yeah, maybe it'll be like a holiday thing.
It's perfect.
Well, this. Start that thing up, and God, it just puts me in a great place. I do that with Curb Your Enthusiasm, too.
Perfect. Have you seen Judd's documentary about...
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The Zen Diary or something?
Yeah,
Zen of Gary Shandling or something like that?
And how many people he influenced.
Oh, yeah.
And how many people Judd influenced, so like it's the George, you know, it's the coaching tree kind
right,
of thing.
Right.
And it's just incredible.
No, it's
like, if you want to like look at who's shaped comedy over the past 30 years, you look right towards Gary Shandling.
I do feel... And this isn't like an Iggy thing with the book, and I'm not trying to like, my book shall be better. That's not what I'm saying. I can't picture him sitting down and writing just because I can't picture him doing it. Right. Which I would imagine most of you who listen to TMA are listening to this and go, yeah, you would agree. And it's not a shot. If anything, I always have to have something. You know, I always have to have something going on. And in a way, it would be a shame if the stories aren't told. Because we lived them, those of us who have been on the show, and obviously there have been different producers and hosts, but not that many considering the length of time it's been on. But the tough thing is it can come across as like taking shots. And in reality, it's just like, this is just what happened. I know it sounds fucking nuts. Mm-hmm. I would imagine people would dispute it, I guess, just because, you know, it would seem so fictitious. And I wouldn't, it's just, you'll be amused, I think, if anything, and you'll be fucking stunned.
Yeah.
Stunned. That this stuff went on. And yet here we've been at this place for nearly 2 years. And I'm just like, oh, there's John Kiaski. He's a normal guy.
Nothing, no chapters were
added here. How was the client trip in the Mediterranean cruise? Yeah. Were things in Athens?
Yeah.
Oh, here's Tommy. You know, yeah, Plowboy texted me at 9 o'clock, you know, about some idea. It's fucking crazy. Your fucking show, you guys. And then it just, I mean, that's just it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? It's just, you know, it's just like a normal thing, and inevitably, I imagine, we'll exit. By we, I mean I, perhaps all of us, who knows, and they might have to whack me. It's just, but that's business. It's like, fuck this, we gotta go have a fight and, you know, get you in Dan Caesar's column. You know, it's just, it's fucking business. It's the way that it works. If I bring them money, I'm here. If I don't, I'm gone. That's business. That's the way the world works. It doesn't have to be a war. With like a bunch of juicy stories. I saw Ben Affleck. I don't know how this popped up in my TikTok, and I don't know where the interview was. Maybe you saw this since you are a cinephile?
Yes.
Although not a Ben Affleck fan, correct?
Love him directing, not a fan of his acting.
Okay. And he was talking about how much he hated Fame. Mm-hmm. Now, to be crystal clear, I recognize our little drop of urine of local fame in comparison to being a guy who's won Oscars and has been globally famous for more than a quarter of a century.
Yeah.
We're talking about two different things. But as he was saying it, it struck me, and I can relate to this, to the TMA thing. And he goes, the thing about, and I can't recall what it was, but I know he said something along the lines of people, especially with now, with social media, there is an expectation for they think they're entitled to the story behind the story behind the story and the people behind the story behind the story behind the story. And almost all the time, it's just boring. Mm-hmm. The people are just, it's disappointingly boring.
Right.
I feel like over the years, people have come to work with me at Inside STL in particular and just been like, God, this guy is like a live wire on the radio back when I was. And is just boring as fuck. What a letdown. What a true letdown. What an absolute letdown this is. But that's the thing. It's like, yeah, like, God, I could post stuff on social media, but it'd just be of me and my wife and my kids at, like, Farmer's Market in Kirkwood, or my son skating at 7 in the morning, or, hey, we're going to give, you know, The Wire another run and try to, you know, I mean, what, it's, you know, pizza night tonight. Yeah. Think we're going to go Dewey's. I mean, it's just...
Consider me locked in.
Yeah, it's just, it's awful. I mean, I personally at this moment love it.
Right.
If I were in my 20s, I'd be like, what the fuck am I doing?
Sure.
But I did do it. It was there were plenty of interesting shit. It's just not now. Mm-hmm. And there isn't really like an exciting story. So now that you're kind of on that side of it with regards to, you know, I don't know what, take your pick of, you know, what's Eli Drinkwitz really like? Or what's Ali Marmol really like? Or what's Craig Berube really like? Yeah, just fucking guys, you know, with jobs and have to deal with bullshit just like you do at work, except they're in the public eye. Yeah, there really isn't a big, I don't have to tell you, you know, I wanted to come over here because I wanted to keep the show together and I wanted everybody to get raises because I thought it was the right thing to do if I was going to get more money. I felt like then everybody else needs to get more money. And then we do the show over here. And that's it. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, the thing took a long time because my contract's like a billion pages, not because of so much money, but because Inside STL owns the show, and so it's a unique agreement with intellectual property, but that's it. And then we got together at the end of November in 2021, me, you, and Iggy, and Doug, and said, all right, Where do you want to go? KFNS or Hubbard? And then we voted. And it was, that was it.
Yeah. I mean, it's not really like an all the president's men kind of story.
Yeah, I mean, it was, you know, meeting in a small room. Hey, you know, all right.
Yeah, I had water.
It's just, you know, it's not, there just isn't, but you also know that sometimes that's how conspiracy theories are born. If people say, well, that's it. And people, there's no way it's, right. That's it.
Sometimes trying to add context like furthers the theories. Right. And it's like, well, at a certain point, like when do you accept that what we're selling is the truth?
Is the truth.
Right.
Now, at the same time, the thing is with the show for the first however many years, we have told you that there were some weird things. But the tough thing about it is, and there were, and they're weirder than you could ever imagine. The thing is, just from a perspective of being straightforward, you know, if I were to tell full-on stories, they would be, I don't know, I guess embarrassing, certainly, to some people.
Sure.
I know, certainly, some people wouldn't want some of these stories, which would help explain a lot of things, to be out. But once you knew them, you'd go, oh, well, shit, you know. But then, inevitably, then, you know, who the stories are about will be fucking pissed and then probably launch something back. And so it's just not anything I'm really interested. So in a way, I want to write it and like give it to my sons and say, hey, here, when I'm gone, here it is. And right. Now people, you know, but fuck, who knows when that would be. So, because it is so fucking weird. Like, I'm sure there's like, for as much as you know, I mean, you know, it's kind of like what I was talking about at the beginning of the podcast with parenting. Unless you went through it, you couldn't possibly imagine like how fucking weird it was. I mean, it was weird. I mean, it was so weird in 2006. 2006! You were 8.
Yeah.
I remember saying to somebody, or this person said to me, it might have been Martin, if we told people what was going on, they'd think we're making it up. And that was 2006, and shit was kind of like normal, relatively. It was crazy, but it wasn't like as crazy as it got. You know, it's like we like jinxed ourselves by saying, well, this is fucking nuts. And then somebody goes, wait till you see what the next 17 years have in store for you. So I think that would entertain people. And then if somebody could take the book, write a screenplay, and then they could have the next Larry Sanders.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
I really do.
It's interesting.
I do feel that. I do feel that way. All right, Jackson, it's 12:43 and it's time for us to shut it down. Thank you to our sponsors who make it possible. And thank you to Action Jackson for sitting here during this nonsense. James Carlton of the Carlton State Farm Insurance Agency, Mark Hanna of Evergreen Wealth Strategies, Seth Goldkamp of Design Air Heating and Cooling, and finally, Jamie Burkhardt, Clayton Patterson, and Peter Munganest of Munganest St. Louis Acura, and Munganest Burkhardt, Alton Toyota. For Action Jackson, I'm Tim McKernan. This has been QFTA on the Tim McKernan Show podcast.